KPFT FM HD2, Houston.
Hi, folks. This is Andrew Ferguson, co-host of Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig. Today marks a year and a day since we broadcast our first show in the aftermath of the insurrection attempt on January 6th, 2021. On this anniversary, we thought it would be interesting to revisit that episode. We think a lot of the topics we discussed and the thoughts we had at the time are still relevant a year later. Whether that's a good thing or not is up to you. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy this episode.
Mike Koenig on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. My co-host is Andrew Ferguson.
Hi there, folks.
And this show was pre-recorded for broadcast on January 11th. Not to overlook the big news of the week, but I did want to mention that we do have a new voter application form for 2021 for Harris County. So you can go to harrisvotes.com and click on the vote by mail link, and there is a form there that you can fill out and mail in. Must be mailed in, can't just be faxed or emailed. And the next election is May 1st. But we're not going to worry about that immediately. Obviously, the major news is the attempted coup in the Capitol. So we kind of have to start there. It's sort of ironic that last week we discussed the topic of, is the Republican Party becoming the sedition party? And here we are.
Yeah. You can find that show, by the way, another excellent Think Wing Radio production, at our website, thinkwingradio.com, or on the archive at archive.kpft.org. It should be still up there. It's only been a week.
I think they keep the show up there for 8 weeks, 6 weeks or 8 weeks.
Yeah, so you got time.
In any case, it's on the website, thinkwingradio.com, blog tab.
Yeah.
So one of the questions that's coming up in the context of the attempted coup at the Capitol is, why does Mitch McConnell have until January 20th to start a trial if the House were to impeach Trump again? Because people are asking, well, I mean, we have Warnock, we have Ossoff, the Republicans in Georgia have conceded. Why can't we just fly them in, swear them in, and let the Democrats take control of the Senate? Excellent question. I didn't have an answer to that until I actually researched the question for this show. The shorthand version of it is that while the Republicans have conceded, and at this point, the assumption is that Warnock and Ossoff have won, the election has to be certified. It has to be certified first in every county in Georgia, which means one county can hold things up. Then it has to be certified by the Secretary of State. And then, essentially, we can ship these guys to Washington, D.C. and swear them in. The timeline that is being estimated is sometime next week. By next week, hopefully, we'll be able to get them sworn in. So sometime before or around Inauguration Day.
Right.
That is basically what the holdup is. So I just thought that would be worth addressing.
Yeah.
The next story is from CNN from Saturday. The day America realized how dangerous Donald Trump is. And bits of the story go, when the history of the 45th presidency is written, Wednesday, January 6th will go down as the day America realized just how dangerous Donald Trump really is. In the span of hours, the country finally witnessed the price of its five-year experiment, turning its election process into a reality show that produced an unhinged megalomaniac as commander-in-chief, who amassed so much power through his lies and fear-mongering that he was able to engineer an insurrection as a final act that left democracy dangling by a thread. Wednesday's siege at the Capitol marked the culmination of Trump's years-long quest to cultivate a fiercely loyal base that would do anything for him by playing on their fears and resentments as he lured them into believing his incessant lies about the sinister motives of government, election fraud, and his own conduct. Not much to add there, right?
Nah, I mean, it's a pretty
purple
good summary.
Purple prose, though. Really purpley. I like it.
Yeah, not wrong. But, I mean, like, this is a pretty important occasion. This is a pretty important day. This is going to be a pretty important presidency for all the wrong reasons, unfortunately. But
consequential, as they say. That doesn't mean good. It just means consequential.
Right. Like the old... what is it? Saying, curse, may you live in interesting times.
Reputedly a Chinese curse. I've never been able to find evidence of that. My wife is Chinese.
Mm.
I have tried.
Yeah.
I think that the story that we have after that, which is actually from the day after the Capitol coup attempt, which is January 7th, this is from businessinsider.com. Haven't seen follow-up on this yet, but time is marching.
Mm.
Some among America's military allies believe Trump deliberately attempted a coup and may have had help from federal law enforcement officials. Multiple European security officials told Insider that Trump appeared to have tacit support among U.S. federal agencies responsible for securing the Capitol complex. Insider is reporting this information because it illustrates the serious repercussions of Wednesday's events. Even if they are mistaken, some among America's international military allies are now willing to give credence to the idea that Trump deliberately tried to violently overturn an election and had some help from federal law enforcement agents. One source told Insider, "We train alongside U.S. federal law enforcement to handle these very matters, and it's obvious that large parts of any successful plan were just ignored." Insider spoke with three officials on Thursday, a French police official responsible for public security in a key section of Paris, two intelligence officials from NATO who directly work in counterterrorism and counterintelligence operations involving the U.S. terrorism and Russia. While they did not furnish evidence that federal agency officials facilitated the chaos, Insider is reporting this information because it illustrates the scale and seriousness of Wednesday's events. One NATO source set the stage using terms more commonly used to describe unrest in developing countries. The official said, "The defeated president gives a speech to a group of supporters where he tells them he was robbed of the election, denounces his own administration's members and party as traitors, and tells his supporters to storm the building where the voting is being held. The supporters, many dressed in military attire and waving revolutionary-style flags, then storm the building where the federal law enforcement agencies controlled by the current president do not establish a security cordon, and the protesters quickly overwhelm the last line of police. The president then makes a public statement to the supporters attacking the Capitol that he loves them, but doesn't really tell them to stop," the official said. Today, the phrase would go, "Today, I am briefing my government that we believe with a reasonable level of certainty that Donald Trump attempted a coup that failed when the system did not buckle." The third official, who works in counterintelligence for a NATO member, agreed the situation could only be seen as a coup attempt, no matter how poorly considered and likely to fail, and said its implications might be too huge to immediately fathom. The official said, "Thank God it didn't work, because I can't imagine how hard it would be to sanction the U.S. financial system," by sanctions meaning the imposition of diplomatic, military, and trade blockages that democratic nations usually reserve for dictatorships. "The broader damage around the world will be extensive," he said, "in terms of reputation, and that's why Putin doesn't mind at all that Trump lost. Every moment the Americans spend on their self-inflicted chaos helps China and Putin, and to a lesser extent, helps many dictators like Erdogan, Hungarian Prime Minister Orban, who breathe cynicism about politics, human rights, and democracy as their air.
Well, I think that it is quite striking that NATO allies are basically treating this as, in my opinion, the coup attempt that it was, because that is not a thing that I think we were expected to ever have to confront.
No one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Right, exactly. I think that in this article particularly, I think the sort of Russophobia and Sinophobia at the end is, you know, a bit outdated, a bit
Well, I think it's pragmatic. It's pragmatic.
I disagree. I think being cautious about Erdogan and Orban, that's fair.
More so than Russia and China?
Yeah. I think we have stronger, firmer evidence that those two world leaders, as it is tenuous, but, you know, there it is, are more of a are frankly more concerning in their policies and positions than Russia and China. Russia and China aren't perfect, of course.
They're bigger. They're more powerful. They have a bigger place on the world stage. China
yes.
is a rising power. Russia is an obvious adversary. Hungary, not such a big deal, except in the context of the EU. Turkey is a big deal as a regional power, as a NATO nation, but it doesn't, I mean, it does have one of the largest militaries in the world, granted.
Yeah.
But they also live in a really bad neighborhood.
I disagree that Russia is rival.
Russia's not an adversary?
Adversary, thank you. No, I just don't think that I don't think the Russian Federation government is anymore. I simply don't think that, you know, we need to be afraid of China and Russia anymore. I don't think they want to get into war with the U.S. I think there are a lot of people.
Just because they don't want to get into a shooting war doesn't mean that they're not dangerous to the U.S.
I think that there are a lot of people in the American government, in the United States government, who are afraid of Russia and China because they were brought up to be afraid of Russia and China, because they don't like other countries being as big and as powerful as the United States. And I think that's an outdated view. I think we've got to accept that we are moving to a multipolar world. We've just got to accept that.
Okay. I'm not even going to get into a discussion about whether a multipolar world is a good thing or a bad thing, because we've really already talked about that on previous shows.
Yeah.
I think that the point that is being made here is there was what is conceivably an orchestrated coup attempt by Trump mm-hmm. and individuals in the government that are sympathetic to him,
yes.
essentially seditionists, maybe in the Secret Service, maybe in the police, maybe in the Department of Defense. A lot of Trump loyalists have recently been put into very strategic places in the government. There were time delays that, even with the complexity of the security situation in Washington, D.C., are going to be seriously investigated because they seem odd, as the mm-hmm. NATO officials said.
Mm-hmm.
I think it actually brings the question up, if this was an orchestrated coup, the question becomes, will we actually have to have the equivalent of a purge after Trump leaves office? Because if actually do have governmental co-conspirators that can't be trusted in the Department of Defense, can't mm-hmm. be trusted in Homeland Security, can't mm-hmm. be trusted in defense of the president, the Secret mm-hmm. Service.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the big questions that's going to have to be looked at, I think is probably being looked at by people who at this point, we just don't know.
Yeah.
We're not sure. It's a possibility.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely worth considering. And honestly, I'm tempted to say yes right now. Because, I mean, good Lord, the man just incited an attack on the capital of the nation. But, you know, the potential issue with a Trumpist purge is if it's too hasty, if it's too sort of based on circumstantial evidence, we get the, you know, people who weren't Trump allies might be unwilling stooges for, you know, somebody else who's not getting caught up. You know, they'd end up getting caught up in it. But it's definitely something serious to consider. I mean, this is basically the closest thing that the United States has had to a proper dictator since its inception, I think.
And it's the only... There's only been one other coup d'etat. Technically not a coup d'etat, but there's only been one other coup in U.S. history.
Yeah.
And that was a small town.
Yeah.
Where you had white supremacists overthrowing a black elected government.
Yeah.
Because they just didn't like having a black elected government.
Yeah.
And now, it was and that was never corrected. In other words, they never threw the white supremacists out and reinstalled the black government.
Right.
They just kind of let it stand. So now that's not a national coup, but
and it was a coup.
Yeah, it was like 130 years ago, but still.
But still. And there was that one plot from, I think, back in the FDR when he tried to introduce the New Deal, the business plot, which, you know, is still debated whether that was actually a thing that existed or not. But
I've only heard a little about that. Can you give me a summary?
Absolutely. So a general, I can't remember the general's name, testified before Congress, I think a decade or two after it was supposed to have happened, that a group of wealthy business owners, businessmen at the time, as it were basically planning to overthrow the elected president of the United States, FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt at that time, because he was introducing the New Deal. He was introducing these jobs programs, these housing reforms, these business reforms. And basically the business owners' concerns were he's going to take the money the business owners have and make them poor and make the employees rich, along those lines, not that those exact words, but
either redistribute the wealth or nationalize companies.
Yeah. And of course, you know, that didn't really end up happening to the degree that they were fearing, because, you know, people in positions like that like to blow things out of proportion. But, you know, there was this allegation that there was a genuine plot. The newspapers at the time basically dismissed it. Some, like, looking into it has been done by historians in more modern days, and it's still not fully definitive whether it did or didn't happen. So something to look up on Wikipedia, the business plot.
I think it's probably about time for an ID.
Absolutely agree. You are listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. I'm Andrew Ferguson. I'm doing the breaks this episode. You can visit the show's website and Mike's blog at thinkwingradio.com. Follow Mike on Twitter at ThinkWing Radio and on Facebook at ThinkWing Radio with Mike Honig. We like to keep things thematically consistent around here. Want to mention real quick, if you try and call into the show, you're not going to get in. I figure most people know about this by now, but we're recording these from home, and you know, we're trying to do our bit to help keep COVID under control.
You can also say from home. It's like pre-recorded could still be in a studio and they can have grand visions of us, you know, in a soundproof room with microphones and headsets. And
Mike, we're on a community radio station. We don't have home studio setups. I'm lucky to have this like $30 microphone from, you know, retailer not named.
I'm just talking into a screen, so you're ahead of me.
Yeah. By the way, you can also, if you want more of my amazing humor, you can find me on Twitter at DominateEYE and spelled the same on Tumblr at DominateI.tumblr.com. I believe we can move on to the next story.
Okay. So you may have heard by the time you're listening to this show that Amazon is booting Parler off its web hosting service. Perhaps you've even heard of Parler. Parler is the place that right-wing extremists go when they feel that Twitter and Facebook are too strict in terms of censorship. And now Amazon, which is hosting Parler, has decided, after as the after effect of a coup d'etat attempt, maybe we need to sort of distance ourselves from any platform that is hosting people. That, for example, there was one particular commenter who wrote, Amazon's move will remove infrastructure from which Parler operates, and a user wrote, sounds like war. It would be a pity if someone with explosives training were to pay a visit to some AWS data centers, the locations of which are public knowledge. And this is among the milder things that people on Parler say. Twitter, of course, has blocked Donald Trump. BuzzFeed News says that the chief policy officer of Parler says that calls for violence propagating across the social network violated its terms of service. Amazon said it was unconvinced that the service's plan to use volunteers to moderate calls for violence and hate speech would be effective. The CEO of Parler, John Matz, I believe is the last name pronunciation, said, this is a coordinated attack by the tech giants to kill competition in the marketplace. We were too successful too fast. So there's kind of a lot to digest there. But there's this common misunderstanding of the First Amendment. And not necessarily saying that companies should be constantly censoring and self-censoring, but the First Amendment simply says that the government will not pass rules regulating speech. You can be kicked out of a shopping mall because it's private property if you go around screaming political ideologies or other things of which they may disapprove. The same is true of Amazon. Think of Amazon as a shopping mall where if you say stuff that upsets the shoppers, they're going to throw you out. Essentially, you may disagree with that, and it certainly is something that you might want used in moderation, but keep that in mind every time someone complains about violating their free speech rights. You're allowed to talk. You're not necessarily guaranteed the platform to talk on.
Exactly. One thing I want to mention, the calls for violence propagating across Parler actually violates Amazon Web Services trust in terms of service, not Parler's, which is a very important distinction. And is part of the, and is basically the whole reason why
Parler has terms of service. They're just really, really relaxed.
They're just very, very lax. And it's clearly the opinion of Amazon that they're too lax. I think this would be, I want to say, as something of a far leftist, I think there might be some decent reasons to, do some creative actions at an Amazon Web Services data center, but this is not one of them. This is the place, basically, where all of the other speech that is deemed too toxic for the internet goes. Well, this and 4chan, I guess. This is not a bastion of free speech. It's a cesspit, as far as I'm concerned. I think this would actually be a very good time, if you'd like to talk more on this, Mike, if you want to talk about how to talk to Trump supporters, because I'm sure there would be a lot of Trump supporters on this platform. And I wonder what they'll do, if they'll come back to other platforms when this place goes dark, if it does.
Well, I think when you're talking to conservatives, one of the approaches that I use, and now we're talking two different classes of people, okay? We're talking about conservatives versus Trumpists, which are already to the right of conservatives.
Sure.
When you want to discuss a topic with conservatives, I try to find a way to make it resonate with their personal values. You know, I guess the way I would frame it is, someone doesn't have to agree with you for the same reasons that you agree with them. They can have different reasons for agreeing on the topic. And one of the best examples is capital punishment. Liberals don't like capital punishment because they feel it's unfair, it's unjust, it's inhumane. Maybe 10% of people put to death from capital punishment may actually be innocent. Conservatives are coming around to being against capital punishment because it costs too much. And if that's what it takes to get them to agree with you, that's okay. I think when you get to a more difficult situation with someone who's even further to the right, one of the keys to discussing anything with anybody, but especially when you have a liberal and conservative, what I've noticed on interview programs is that conservatives take their opportunity to state their case. And when it's the turn of the liberal to state their case, the conservative keeps interrupting and trying to digress and trying to change the topic and trying classic whataboutism. And one of the best ways to have that kind of a discussion is not to let yourself be sidetracked. Be aware that when they don't have a good answer to a point you make, they will try to divert you. They will try to interrupt you. They will try to get your thought processes confused, whatever it takes to distract you. I mean, it's a classic diversionary attack, if you will. Don't let yourself be diverted. If you're on a topic, and frankly, this is also a good thing to remember when you get into family disputes. Sometimes you get into a situation where the term I was once told was gunny sacking, where one person in the argument will bring up all the grievances they have ever had. And the other person is then put in the position of possibly having to address every grievance this person ever had. The best way to deal with that, just like the best way to deal with a political conversation or discussion or debate, make sure it stays focused on the thing you're arguing about. Don't let it get distracted or you'll never resolve anything. So, actually, what works in politics can also work in your personal life. It's worth remembering.
Yeah. You are listening to ThinkWing Radio with Mike Honig on 90.1 KPFT Houston. The story links for today's show can be found on the blog post for today's show at our website, thinkwingradio.com. You can also podcast ThinkWing Radio if you head to archive.kpft.org. There's a RSS podcast button, I believe. Also, if you have Google Podcasts or any other podcast app, search for ThinkWing Radio there. Could be a convenient way to listen for you. You can find our social media. Mike is on Twitter at ThinkWing Radio and on Facebook at ThinkWing Radio with Mike Koenig. I'm on Twitter at DominateEYE and spelled the same on Tumblr, DominateI.tumblr.com.
And please, we might remind people to please tell your friends, neighbors, and acquaintances to sample this show, other shows, sample kpft.org.
Oh, absolutely.
You can donate and support KPFT, which is completely community supported, at kpft.org/donate, or click on the link at kpft.org, or text 713-526-5738, the word give, all ways to give money. But if you can't give money, word of mouth is also pretty good.
Absolutely.
So I happened to run across Fox News's coverage of the Capitol riot, the Capitol coup. I was looking for the Biden response, and this is actually the story that came up. And they title it, Media Mirrors Biden by Vilifying Police, Comparing Response to Black Lives Matter Protests. Lawmakers, civil rights activists, and professional athletes have called Wednesday's attack an example of white privilege. This is Fox News. This is from January 9th. As America attempts to recover from the Capitol riot, everyone from President-elect Joe Biden and NBA star LeBron James to members of the mainstream media such as Joy Behar and Joy Reid have vilified police officers for their role in the tragic event. While Democrats and media members have waffled on whether or not riots are a good idea, this is from Fox, they have remained consistent when it comes to criticizing cops. After months of calls to defund the police, the latest talking point is that U.S. Capitol Police would have acted differently if the rioters were largely black. According to what they say Biden wrote on Twitter, no one can tell me that if it had been a group of Black Lives Matter protesters yesterday, they wouldn't have been treated very differently than the mob that stormed the Capitol. We all know that's true, and it's unacceptable. I can believe Biden wrote that. MSNBC's Joy Reid took things further and claimed white Americans aren't afraid of police. This is the key quote, and we're going to be doing something unusual after this. She is quoted as saying, "White Americans are never afraid of the cops, even when they are committing insurrection. Even when they're engaged in attempting to occupy our capital to steal the votes of people who look like me, Joy, because in their minds, they, white people, own this country. They own that capital. They own the cops. The cops work for them. And people like Joy Reid, me, have no damn right to try to elect a president because we don't get to pick the president. They get to pick the president. They own the president. They own the White House. They own this country." The far-left MSNBC host continued, quote, "So when you think you own it, you own the place, you ain't afraid of the police because the police are you and they reflect back to them. Guarantee you, if that was a Black Lives Matter protest in D.C., there would be people shackled, arrested, or dead." This is the Fox presentation of the coup attempt and Joy Reid's discussion of the coup attempt. I think it's worth playing the clip of Joy Reid so that you can hear the whole quote and not the part that simply is to make her look like an angry black woman. Mm. So this is going to run 4 minutes, 12 seconds. It starts off a little slow, but you'll get the full context of exactly what she said and why she said it and how she said it. So let's go and roll with that.
It's sort of ironic to be on with you and with Rachel, and Rachel in particular, because I can go back to 2014 when I would be on Rachel's show as a correspondent at curfew time in Baltimore when I was covering the Freddie Gray uprisings. Mm. And these were mass marches that were in regard to police taking Freddie Gray's body and treating it like a rag doll and flinging him into the back of a police van and then riding around with him unshackled in that van until the ragdoll broke and he died. And he died alone in the back of a car being brutalized for no reason other than making eye contact with police as he rode his bike. And the uprisings that took place after Freddie Gray brought in a level of policing that I've never witnessed ever in life. It looked like a war zone. Police brought in tanks. They brought in body armor. They were wearing full body armor rubber suits where they almost looked robotic, full gear, enormous, powerful weaponry. And they were phalanxed out all across Baltimore, Penn and North. They were standing menacingly waiting to brutalize anyone who even looked at them funny. The level of force, the level of just almost indiscriminate rudeness, cruelty, hardness of those police officers, and at curfew time, which would be 9 o'clock, and then almost every night during that uprising, at some point I would go on with you, Rachel, and describe to you what I was seeing, and it was terrifying. And what terrified me in those moments in Baltimore were not the marchers. I was never afraid among the marchers. The marchers just wanted justice. They just didn't think it was okay to just kill a guy because he looked at the police funny. I wasn't afraid of them. I was afraid of the cops because they were menacing. They knew those marchers were coming every night. They knew there was going to be a curfew every night. The great Elijah Cummings would walk people home and get them to go home because he didn't want them out after curfew. But there would always be some guys who would stay out after the curfew, who would refuse to go home, who would claim the right to be in their streets. And I was never afraid of them. I was afraid of the cops. The reason, as Claire talked about, that these people were so unafraid of the cops, who were sparsely distributed through our capital, which hasn't been breached since 1812, when it was burned, The reason they could easily and casually, with their cameras on, film themselves throwing things through the walls of our Capitol, our property, going inside the Capitol, sitting in Speaker Pelosi's office, casually take pictures of themselves, have that played on Fox News, they know that they are not in jeopardy. Because the cops are taking selfies with them, walking them down the steps to make sure they're not hurt, taking care with their bodies, not like they treated Freddie Gray's body. White Americans aren't afraid of the cops. White Americans are never afraid of the cops, even when they're committing insurrection, even when they're engaged in attempting to occupy our Capitol, to steal the votes of people who look like me. Because in their minds, they own this country, they own that Capitol, they own the cops work for them, and people like me have no damn right to try to elect a president. Because we don't get to pick the president, they get to pick the president, they own the president, they own the White House, they own this country. And so when you think you own it, you own the place, you ain't afraid of the police because the police are you. And the police reflect back to them. We're with you. You're good. We're not going to hurt you because you're not them. Guarantee you if that was a Black Lives Matter protest in D.C., there would already be people shackled, arrested, or dead.
So I think this is a classic example of how you can take something that's true and put it in a context that makes it sound different.
Mm.
So, you know, on the one hand, she got a couple of minor details wrong. So Washington wasn't burned in 1812, was burned in 1814. And if you see the video, which I will have a link to on the blog post for this show, they have a side-by-side where she's talking about the Freddie Gray protests in 2014, and they show pictures of the cops. And the cops may be in body armor. They may be in winter wear over body armor. It's a little hard to say. But this is the impression she had in the moment. She was frightened of the cops. She was not frightened of the protesters. I think that Fox News is taking a white privileged position. They cannot see the possibility that a non-white person might find the cops scary, and a white person might find them less scary. My brother-in-law is Robert Hooks. He is a Black man. And there are states he won't drive in because as a Black man, he had the talk when he was a kid. He's had experiences as an adult. We've seen news. We've seen the phone videos that, if not for those, I think a lot of white people, including me, would still have doubts about these complaints of police brutality. We have the statistics, we have the videos, we have the testimony of people. Joy Reid is just reflecting that experience.
Right. I think that Fox's aim here, Fox's agenda, if you like, was to basically paint Joy Reid as trying to be racist against all white people. And I don't think that's what she was trying to do. I mean, I think while, yes, she did say, quote, white Americans are never afraid of the cops, she meant that as, she did mean that as a criticism of all white people's place in American society. Absolutely. But it was, you know, when you put that sort of context behind it of, you know, what she saw in Baltimore, what she's seen at other, you know, racial justice protests, you know, it is true that white people are less afraid of the cops than Black people. Certainly on
young
account
white
of race.
Men don't get the talk that young Black men get.
Right. Certainly on account of race. You know, as you know, an openly bisexual man, you know, I might be afraid of the cops for other reasons, but as a white man, I'm not afraid that they'll discriminate against me based on race because I know they don't do that. You know, it's
you.
Sorry?
They don't discriminate based on race to you or to me.
Right. To me. Yeah. To white people. And so, you know, though Fox may think it a bit abrasive, the problem with their position is that Joy Reid isn't lying. Nothing she's saying is wrong.
I think the problem is, and I think to some extent we're doing it, is Fox is putting themselves in her head.
Mm.
And to some extent, we are putting ourselves in her head. And I mean, having listened to Joy Reid over the years, having followed her on Twitter over the years and occasionally read pieces she's written, she's a very smart woman.
Mm.
And she is expressing her life experience.
Mm-hmm.
She is expressing one particular time when she was obviously traumatized by the experience. She's reflecting the experience that a lot of people of color have and talk about. You know, it's like you can't tell someone how to feel. You
right.
can't tell someone that they shouldn't feel the way they feel.
Right.
And she is expressing her experience. And Joy Reid is generally a measured, careful speaker. Blunt, but measured. So I think that this was atypical for her and speaks to how angry she is at what she is perceiving as a clear difference between
yeah.
how the police handled an invasion of the Capitol building by white people versus a civil rights protest by black people.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we're talking about a remarkable contrast here, and the fact that Fox can't see it, and the fact that they can't explain it to their listeners and their readers and their viewers speaks really more about Fox than Joy Reid.
Mm. Well, I would almost say that, you know, they see it perfectly fine. It's just they'd rather not acknowledge it. And I would argue the same is true probably for a lot of their viewership. I also feel like I should also say, yes, of course, I don't know what Joy Reid is thinking specifically. You know, I don't know exactly what it is that, you know, she was trying to say with that, and to claim that I do know is inaccurate and a bit insulting. So I apologize for that. If I gave that impression, that's totally my fault. But, you know, this is another instance of Fox basically, you know, twisting the truth and twisting facts to serve their narrative, that everybody's out to get good old America. Everybody's out to get good old white people. And
Fox distorts, you decide.
Exactly. This is Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. I'm co-host Andrew Ferguson. You can listen online, not just on your radio, or donate to the station at kpft.org. We greatly appreciate any support you can give us there. There's a donate button that you can click. You can also donate by text, 713-526-5738. Did I get it?
Yes, you did. We just don't use it as much as we used to.
We just don't use
it. Let's say it once more without the hesitation, pauses, and laughter. It's 713-526-5738. You can text to that phone number the word give, and it will take you through an automated process.
Right.
It was just funny listening to you say it.
I'm glad. I'm glad I could amuse you. And, you know, to listen online, I believe there's a listen live link, but you can also go to archive.kpft.org, and in the drop down link, select Think Wing Radio, and you'll see all the episodes that are hosted on the archive there. You can also write to us at thinkwingradio@msn.com or tweet at thinkwingradio or myself at DominateEYE on Twitter, or comment on the blog post for the show, which you can find at thinkwingradio.com. We appreciate any kind of comments you have, comments, suggestions, anything. As long as
we really want to hear from you. We really miss the live calls. We really do.
I was going to say, as long as we think you're trying to improve the show, but I mean, frankly, even if you want to troll us, I think
we still like hearing from us. As long as you politely troll us.
Yeah. Okay.
Just be courteous. Okay. Mm. But we can take criticism. We're big boys. Meanwhile, in the rest of the world, because other stuff is happening aside from the attempted coup in the United States, both Iraq and Iran have issued warrants to Interpol for arrest. Iraq's judiciary issued an arrest warrant on Thursday for Donald Trump for ordering the January 3rd airstrike that killed Iranian General Soleimani.
Mm.
And the Associated Press also reports that Iran has issued an arrest warrant for Trump and has requested Interpol's help in arresting him once in June and again this week. And a similar or related article in the New York Post has a comment from Interpol that they rejected a request in June from Tehran because Pentagon officials and members of the U.S. Central, I'm sorry, let me back up. Interpol rejected a request in June from Tehran prosecutor Ali Al-Kesemer to issue a warrant for Trump, Pentagon officials and members of the U.S. Central Command on murder and terrorism charges. The International Police Agency said its constitution forbids it from undertaking actions against political figures. It says it is strictly forbidden for the organization to undertake any intervention or activities of a political, military, religious, or racial character. Now, but we can understand why they would have wanted to arrest Trump and have him deported to their respective countries.
Of course.
From Al Jazeera, there's a story, and in any other week, this would have been an important story. Mike Pompeo lifts curbs on official U.S. contacts with Taiwan. The announcement comes before a planned trip to Taiwan by the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. that has drawn anger from China. In a statement, Pompeo said the U.S. Department of State had created complex internal restrictions to regulate our diplomats, service members, and other officials' interactions with their Taiwanese counterparts. The U.S. government took these actions unilaterally in an attempt to appease the communist, pardon me, in an attempt to appease the communist regime in Beijing. No more, he said. It was not clear what the change means in practice, with Pompeo saying executive branch communications with Taiwan will still be handled by the American Institute in Taiwan, which is owned by the U.S. government and serves as a de facto embassy. China warned that the Trump administration, I prefer regime, that it would pay a, quote, heavy price if the planned visit takes place. The Chinese mission to the U.N. said the U.S. will pay a heavy price for its wrong action. China strongly urges the U.S. to stop its crazy provocation, stop creating new difficulties for China-U.S. relations, and stop going further on the wrong path. In any other week, this would be an important diplomatic story.
In any other week, yeah. I mean, I think that at the very least, this is kind of more posturing from Trump, because there doesn't seem to be any real change in administration there. You know, they're still going through the American Institute in Taiwan.
China. I mean, what it does and what I think the Trump administration or regime is doing a lot of is trying to create metaphorical facts on the ground that will be hard for Biden to change.
I could see that. Yeah, I could definitely believe that.
And happening in a lot of forums or fora, as the case may be, that, again, because of the attempted coup d'etat, are really kind of flying below the radar screen because it's got to be a really small radar screen. But I guess the point I wanted to make is, aside from the attempted coup d'etat in the United States, there really is other stuff going on. So the New Zealand Central Bank says its data system was hacked. There's an election in Kazakhstan where the opposition is boycotting the election. There's another election going on in Kyrgyzstan. There's a roadside bomb that killed three people in Kabul, Afghanistan. Australia, the U.S., U.K., and Canada have condemned mass arrests in Hong Kong. Pakistani authorities are working to restore power after a blackout of a thermal power plant that has plunged millions into darkness. Landslides have killed 11 and injured 18 in West Java. So, you know, the world is going on without us or in spite of us.
The polar opposite of a slow news day.
Yes. Or a slow news week, for that matter. Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, the United States and I suppose the West in general, United States more than some, is accused of being very egocentric in its news coverage because, you know, every person, every country wants to be the hero of its own story.
Right.
But other stuff is happening, and while I realize that you have to make editorial choices, editorial decisions, there are time constraints, or in the case of print media, print constraints, cost of paper, cost of ink, whatever,
you know, it's always worth remembering other stuff is going on. And while it's easy to get wrapped up in domestic news stories, whether national or state or local, it's important to sometimes seek out what's going on internationally just as a matter of perspective.
Absolutely.
There was a story we didn't get to last week. We ran out of time. It's a January 2nd editorial board piece, opinion piece from the Washington Post. You know, this made a lot more sense to some extent on January 4th, but seems to become in some ways a little more urgent now.
Yeah, I mean, we need an aftermath. We'll need to deal with this stuff. And this is one of the ways we can do it, a number of the ways we can do it.
I think what made this significant, and I'll go forward with the points, it's not that anything here is extremely new. I think what made it consequential to me is this was an opinion piece by the Washington Post editorial board. Mm. You know, this isn't a columnist. This isn't an op-ed. Generally, editorial opinion pieces are very deeply considered by a number of people, which is why it's a board. So a lot of people had to come together, meeting of the minds, in order to decide to write this piece and to publish it. Mm. So it says in part, Mr. Trump and a disturbing number of Republican officials have made obsolete the old assumptions that each major party will play fair, that electoral results will reflect the will of the majority, and that each side will willingly turn over power when defeated at the polls. The nation needs a top-to-bottom review of how it conducts elections, counts votes, and assures the public of the democracy's health so that it resists those who want to restrict voting, trash legitimate ballots, and leverage positions of trust to upend valid results. Among President-elect Joe Biden's first acts should be to convene a high-level commission to recommend a democracy overhaul. The review must be wide-ranging, beginning with the Electoral College itself. The commission should look at encouraging voter participation, which could mean universal voter registration or mail-in balloting being expanded. The commission could even review how mandatory voting has worked in places such as Australia. Some states and cities are experimenting with ranked choice voting. Promising reform could eliminate the threat of third-party spoilers throwing elections to candidates most voters dislike. Voters must be assured their ballots are secure from malicious actors. That means stronger national standards and federal money for voting equipment, staff, and support, including stipulations on using statistically sound methods to audit vote counts. Americans should have confidence that partisan officials will not be able to reject voting results. Internationally, the U.S. is unusual in that its chief voting administrators, secretaries of state, are partisan officials. Finally, Americans should never again have to dig up rickety old laws to determine whether arcane electoral college counting procedures might offer federal lawmakers a route to overturning a presidential election by congressional vote. The commission should recommend a thorough update of the 1887 Electoral Count Act that eliminates the possibility of partisan Congress rejecting a properly certified electoral vote. There's much more that a democracy commission could consider. The nation's democratic system, wounded and exposed from a rough 2020, cannot limp into 2024 in comparable or worse shape. Many of the questions raised in the past several weeks, this is from the 2nd of January, are not ones most Americans previously imagined they needed to contemplate, but they are now arguably the most important issues facing the country as it reckons with the Trump era. I think one of the best expressions that has been used for the Wednesday coup attempt is it was shocking, but it wasn't surprising. You know, we talked about sedition in last week's show. Over the last several years on this show and in many, many other places, there's been discussion about Trump as a proto-authoritarian figure, the kind of policies that he has put into place that have either where he's tried to either affect the census count in order to favor white people, alienating allies, cozying up with dictators. I mean, there have been all kinds of discussions about Trump. But when this opinion was published in the Washington Post, we hadn't had a coup attempt yet.
Mm.
it's like, how much lower can we sink? There really is no place else to go from a coup attempt except to a successful coup.
Right.
That's the last place you can go. So we're pretty much near the bottom here.
I think that, you know, this editorial was broadly correct when it was published. It's even more broadly correct now. I think that this is even, you know, to even like step back from the events at the Capitol on the 6th, like the fact that reforms like the, you know, changes, if not the removal of the Electoral College, ranked choice voting. I think they're here on the editorial board. They're talking about implementing ranked choice voting nationwide for federal elections. You know,
Congress doesn't normally act on state voting rules, but that isn't to say they can't.
Sure.
So but, Congress can mandate national mail-in voting. Congress can mandate that everyone is automatically registered when they get a social security card or a driver's license or whatever.
Yeah, these reforms are things that, you know, voting reform advocates have been talking about for years and were never even given the time of decades. And we're never even really given the time of day. And we have suddenly seen, you know, now we are in a position where the editorial board of a major national newspaper is saying these reforms are necessary and in order to protect our democracy. That is that right in itself for me is a perfect emblem of the shift that we've seen in U.S. politics in the past few years. Just, you know, because of Trump and because of the kinds of people he has inspired to get into politics. And you know, there's a lot of stuff here that I really want to see. Ranked choice voting nationwide, I'd love to see that. Automatic registration,
a brand new Voting Rights Act to replace the one gutted by the Supreme Court.
Is that in the
original? Should be one of the very first orders of business.
Is that in the original? That's not in there. But you're right. It is something that is needed. Absolutely. You know, mandatory voting. I don't know about that. I don't know if you want to make it a chore, but you know, not everything's a winner here, but there are so many winners here that I think, frankly, this is a very good starting document for anybody who wants to run on overhauling American elections. Look at a lot of this stuff and research it. And, you know, if I like what you're saying, I might support you. and that's as good
I like
as I
the
can
way
guarantee.
You put the emphasis on certain parts of that sentence. It's just
that's the closest I can get to a guarantee on this radio station. Now, let me tell you why.
There you go. All right, you've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. We'll be back next week. My co-host has been Andrew Ferguson. He's been doing a lot of heavy lifting today. Really, really has. And thank you. And he's the indispensable editor who I sometimes seriously overwork. Thank you so much for listening. I hope the show's been interesting to you. I hope we've contributed something to your day and your week. And we'll hopefully be back here next Monday with you. Take care.
See you later, folks.
It's waiting right outside the storm. Why don't we cross the bridge together? And find the place that's safe and warm. It's not too late. We should be giving. Only with love can we climb. It's not too late.
This is Quantum Leap Radio. I am the Grandfather Clock.
And I am your girl, Dope Courtney, a.k.a. Dopico Jones. And we are excited.
No.
Oh, wait.
Keep talking.
Oh, I said it, didn't I? I'm sorry. This is your girl, Dope A. Courtney, a.k.a. Dopico Jones.
I want to tell the people that we are now in their ear on a Saturday.
Our new time is 9 a.m. to 11 a.m.
That's right, where they can get the hip-hop of the past, present, and possibly future.
You want to find us on the HD2 channel at 9 a.m.
KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, HD.2, or worldwide at kpft.org/listen under the HD2 link, or you can actually find us on the Pacifica Radio app. This is Houston's community station. We are Quantum Leap Radio.